I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
We're off and rolling. Thursday, July 24, 2025 is the date. Welcome into the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am your host, Gabe Kuhn, on X at G_Kuhn71. I'm alongside the executive producer of the show. That would be Connor Dunning on X at C Dunning 99. Connor, what's the word, brother?
Thursday night, 7 o'clock, general knowledge trivia at Hampline. Great people, great beer, great pizza. Then I'm seeing Fantastic Four after.
Oh, can't beat it.
It's a great night.
Can't beat it.
Great night ahead.
Speaking of Fantastic Four, the Pedro Pascal memes about his anxiety have been making me laugh the past couple of days. He was grabbing onto one of his co-stars who is pregnant and married and, I don't know, wrapping around the back of her, and she was massaging his earlobes and some of those things. I know he's got anxiety. Been making me laugh the past couple of days.
I think
the memes are pretty good.
The memes are funny. I think people are overblowing.
Of course. Of course they are. But that's what we do.
I think Page was a pretty good dude.
Yeah, he is. And everything he is a part of is a hit.
Yes.
Just about everything.
And mostly quality. I wasn't a fan of the last season of The Last of Us.
Well,
so I think
he was,
it went off the rails a little bit. But it's not like he was... Spoiler.
Involved as much. He wasn't as involved as much. I don't want to give out too.
He was in a couple.
Is it a spoiler at this point?
No,
with the season completely over.
Well, the game's been
wrapped
out for how long? Now,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, he dies in episode one. Okay, or was it episode two?
I think it was two.
Yeah,
it was like two or three. Yeah.
Yes, but he still popped up. They did some flashbacks and everything like that. But he wasn't that big of a part of The Last of Us.
I'm very excited to see Fantastic Four. I've heard good things.
Yeah. Yeah. It's gonna rip.
Have you seen Superman yet?
I have not.
Ooh, dude.
Really? Are you gonna be comparing the two?
No.
Okay. All right.
Because they're too. You know, I know people like to do
superhero.
Marvel versus DC stuff, but if you give me a good movie, I will enjoy them all.
I hear you. Now we have 3 hours of talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. We're loaded up with guests. 4:30. We're gonna bring on Paranormal on a Thursday. Kyron Samuels covers NFL and college football for Sports Illustrated. 5 o'clock. Jeff Calkins will join. Daily Memphian columnist. You know Jeff Calkins very well from the Jeff Calkins Show. And then 6 o'clock, I figured since we played his sound several times yesterday, might as well bring him on the show. Shehan Jeyaraja, CBS Sports national college football writer. He will join. He had, to me, and obviously I mentioned it yesterday, I thought it missed a little bit of context about the history of the University of Memphis and the athletic department, but I thought he had a pretty level-headed reason as to why Memphis missed the boat on the Big 12 yet again, even with that unbelievable $200 million offer. He said that Memphis, historically, has been more reactive than proactive, as opposed to the schools that have been added to the Big 12 already. But I want to bring him on, talk about realignment, because we do have some realignment news today, kind of, right? Out of North Carolina. North Carolina's trying to wiggle their way out of the ACC eventually, gets to the SEC. Now, that can't happen until 2030 or 2031 in all likelihood, because that's when the exit fee goes down. And that exit fee goes from $93 million to $75 million, so it's still a lot to pay, but North Carolina could probably foot that bill. But we could, by the time we get to 2030, be in a very interesting spot, and I hope Memphis tries to capitalize. We'll see what happens there. We'll have the trip around the NFL at 5:30. We'll get into the Blitz at 6:30. I'm going to talk with Big Ten Media Days over about my team to beat. My team to beat, not only the Big Ten, but in college football. But AAC Media Days are rolling along right now, Connor. And you know what we're doing? We're poor shaming. That's how AAC Media Days have been kicked off. John Sumrall, head coach of Tulane, saw UAB football put out an interesting tweet where they had their helmet in front of an American Airlines logo, so UAB was flying commercial. I also saw that Rice was flying commercial. Tulane and John Sumrall put out a picture, and John Sumrall put attached with a caption, "First class?" question mark, and they're on a PJ, so we're poor shaming off the top. I don't know if that's a great look, but Memphis was on a PJ as well. Although the PJ that Tulane has looks pretty damn impressive. I got to give them credit where credit's due. Also, along the same lines of AAC Media Days, and I don't know if it's poor shaming exactly, but have you gotten a look? I saw this from Brian Moss of Tiger Sports Report, which is aligned with On3 now. Did you see that the AAC Media Days at the Charlotte Convention Center is sharing the space with something else? Did you happen to see this?
Man, I did. I did.
They're sharing the space with a Mary Kay convention. For those that don't know about Mary Kay, it's for the older women out there, lovely ladies. They are, Mary Kay, sort of a pyramid scheme-esque skincare brand that a lot of older ladies buy into and sell. So there was a Mary Kay convention, and I was talking with Jeffrey before I sat down in this chair to do the show today. I am willing to wager a lot of money that the Mary Kay convention is producing a lot more money for the Charlotte Convention Center in the city of Charlotte than the AAC media kickoff is. That's my assumption.
Yeah.
Because the picture that I saw from Brian Moss, you should go look at it, Connor. The lobby of the Charlotte Convention Center is filled with Mary Kay sellers, with Mary Kay convention goers. Just filled. I didn't see really any AAC involvement. But they're sharing the space with a Mary Kay convention.
Womp, womp.
They're rolling out their new name, right? The American Conference, or the American. They're rolling out Soar the Eagle.
No way. Oh, my God.
With our lovely Mary Kay convention goers.
They have a bigger sign than the American.
Without question.
That's crazy.
Listen, AAC Media Days, the American Media Days, American Conference Media Days, not that serious in general. And we'll try to cover them throughout the day. Everybody's going to have their chance to speak, including Ryan Silverfield and William Whitlow and Brennan Lewis, who are on hand with Ryan. But American Media Days are just kind of a throwaway. They have limited them, especially since COVID. COVID, they did 2 years of virtual Media Days after COVID. Now they're back out in the world and they're sharing a space with Mary Kay, the Mary Kay convention. I think it makes sense. I mean, it's just how it is.
Please get us out of this dumbass conference for the love of everything. Sweet baby Jesus. Please get Memphis.
Connor has
conference.
His prayer hands together. Just for those that are curious right now.
Every time you think I can't get even more embarrassing, they somehow find a new way to become more embarrassing. I thought that stupid eagle was bad enough.
Hey, don't you disparage Soar's great name. Who are you? Who are you?
I will disparage and be happy about it.
Hey, I did think about this because I just look at Soar and I look at some of the things that get spit out of ChatGPT and AI. I seriously ask this question. Halfway joking, a little tongue-in-cheek. Did they create Soar the Eagle through AI?
They probably paid someone to do that. And to be honest,
I saw the posters, and it's just Soar the Eagle.
Whoever got money to design that, good for you. Honestly, good for you.
You think you could do better?
No.
Oh.
I'm not a graphic designer.
That's not the point. That's not the point. You're just saying, whoever was able to talk the American Conference out of money to make Soar the Eagle.
Yes, whoever tricked the American into, I'm passionate about graphic design, good for you.
They've clearly brought in a marketing firm to switch up the brand and bring in Soar the Eagle, right? Like, that's very clear to me. The fact that that's the only idea they ended up with after probably hiring a marketing firm for really good money, oh my gosh. That's brutal. We're going to change the name from the American Athletic Conference to the American Conference, and we're going to bring in a one-of-a-kind brand ambassador.
It looks like SBA.
Yeah, it does.
It's as if someone was like, I need a reference point for an eagle in sports. They Googled it. St. Benedict popped up, and they said, ah, that's pretty good. And they barely changed a few things about it.
I would not be surprised if that was AI generated, and then
they
worked around the edges
I
to make
really
Soar come to life.
Good Lord!
Yeah. All right. Now on to other things. Big Ten Media Days are wrapped up, and the Big Ten Media Poll is as follows: you have Penn State at the top with 11 first place votes. Ohio State, who won the national championship, reigning national champion, at number 2 with 10 first place votes. Oregon at number 3 with 2 first place votes. Illinois at 4, no first place votes. And then at 5, rounding out the top 5, Michigan with 1 first place vote. And I have talked myself into something, Connor. I've talked myself into something, and you can't talk me out of it at this particular moment. And I, even after last year, seeing them get into the Final Four, seeing how they sort of managed their college football playoff situation in their season, I was high on them because I knew they were going to bring back a lot of talent. But Penn State, who was picked at the top of the Big Ten media poll, I am fully bought in. I think they're the team to beat in college football. Why do I say that? Well, let me take you through a comparison that I think is very, very apt. Penn State in 2025 is 2023 Michigan. Why do I say that? People will go all over the place. Oh, James Franklin hasn't won, blah, blah, blah. But just listen in. One, both teams in the year before made the Final Four. Michigan lost to TCU 51-45. They wanted to get over top. And Penn State made the Final Four in 2024, losing to Notre Dame in that semifinal game. They also both, and I know that hindsight 2020 and Jim Harbaugh has turned himself into an NFL coach and we think differently of him, but both of them, both of these particular programs, have a coach that is known for being right there and not capitalizing. James Franklin is almost the figurehead of that conversation. A guy who's right there on the precipice of making something happen never quite gets over top. Jim Harbaugh did it in 2023, but the conversation going into the year was, can we really trust him? Is he going to beat Ohio State? Is he going to do it again? Can they make it happen? We can do the Connor Stallions thing if you want. I don't want to do that right now. But Jim Harbaugh, after the season in 2022, going into 2023, even with all that returning talent, that was the conversation we were having about him, and we're having the same one about James Franklin. Another thing, another parallel, the running back room. Back completely. For Michigan, when they were in the Final Four in 2022, they had Blake Corum and they had Donovan Edwards. What did Penn State do this offseason? They retained Nick Singleton, unbelievable back, and Katron Allen. So the running back rooms, you have experienced, obvious production and value in the running back room. Also, how many times have I said this? This is coming back from last year's college football season. But you remember what I always said about Drew Aller? Drew Aller is James Franklin's J.J. McCarthy. He absolutely 100% is. The parallels are, it's just too similar. It's a former blue chip recruit, four or five star, multi-year starter, and they have NFL hype. Now, with the NFL hype, you see the idea, right? Big body, talent, with the arm, good stats, limit turnovers, all that. You see all of that good stuff. But with both those guys, Drew Aller and J.J. McCarthy, you can't really say you've actually seen it fully with your own eyes, like materialize into a guy that you think will be a good NFL starter. You've always had the question with J.J. McCarthy and with Drew Aller, do they have the it factor? Are they going to be able to will their team to tough wins throughout a season? J.J. McCarthy did it in 2023. We'll see if Drew Aller can do it. And here's the most out there comparison, in-your-face comparison. The rest of the real contenders in the Big Ten have quarterback questions to answer. Ohio State, Julian Sands stepping in there. First-year quarterback. What's he going to look like? Michigan. Compared to last year, their quarterback situation is unbelievable. It's like Tom Brady's back there behind center. But Bryce Underwood is a true freshman that's going to start for Michigan. True freshmen don't have that much success historically. And then Oregon, Dante Moore. He was kind of a failed, you know, quarterback at UCLA. He's bounced around a little bit, sat behind Dylan Gabriel. Now he gets his opportunity at Oregon. Can he break through? And then you look in 2023 when Michigan was able to go win their national championship. Ohio State had Kyle McCord. Penn State had Drew Aller in his first year behind center. So there were questions about both those schools and their quarterback position. And let me end by saying this with Penn State. Although I do think they're the team to beat, not just in the Big Ten, but in college football, and I do think they're 2023 Michigan, the way everything's playing out, this has to be the year for James Franklin. I don't think there's any other choice. Ohio State just won a national championship. They're fat and happy. They had a bunch of guys graduate or go into the NFL draft. They're reloading. Michigan, starting a true freshman at quarterback. We don't know if Sharon Moore's the guy. He could be, but what's he going to do with Bryce Underwood? And then Oregon is replacing nearly everybody, including the quarterback, Dante Moore, stepping in. They are 109th in the country in returning production. 109th out of 134. So they have to capitalize. James Franklin has to move forward and go get that natty this year because of all of the circumstances that I just listed. And going back to my comparison with 2023 Michigan, the parallels are there. And we know this from having watched college football all these years. History has a way of repeating itself.
When you look at their schedule, do you think that the only team they could potentially lose to is Oregon? Because it sounds like you think that they should be better than Ohio State this season.
I think that they should be. Listen, there's going to be potential slip-ups for Penn State on this schedule this year. I do think defensively they're very solid. They bring back, I know they lost Abdul Carter, but denied Dennis Sutton as a first-round draft pick. In all likelihood, 6'5", 275 pounds coming off the edge. So they have some guys that can step into bigger roles. But when you look at their schedule, you look at Oregon and you look at Ohio State as the potential slip-ups. I think they will win one, if not both of those games. But even if they finish the regular season with those two losses and go 10-2, they're going to be in the field of 12 and they're going to have a chance to make a run. We look at the last year with Ohio State, for example. I know that they weren't undefeated in the Big Ten, and I know they weren't undefeated overall. They lost two games. They ended up making that unbelievable run. So, yeah, they're going to have a couple of chances to slip up, but they're at home against Oregon early in the season. Oregon's replacing guys. Penn State has a bunch of continuity. Week four, I feel like that will work to the advantage of Penn State. And then Ohio State, yeah, they're going to be on the road. But again, all of the things that I already mentioned about Ohio State, they're fat and happy. You finally got that first national championship under your belt if you're Ryan Day. You're replacing a lot. I'm not saying it's a rebuilding year. It's never a rebuilding year at Ohio State. But you're going with a lot of young guys, seeing if you can really move into the future and reload for next year in all likelihood. So, again, they're going to have chances to slip up. But even if they slip up in those two games that we think they could, Oregon and Ohio State, they'll still be in the field of 12. They'll still have a chance to run and get to a national championship and win it.
With Penn State, it's about winning the games they shouldn't when they're underdogs. Because over the last three seasons, they're 34-2 as a favorite, 27-0 when they're favored by at least 6 points. But when they're underdogs in the last three seasons, 0-6. And that's basically the college football playoff. Once they get to the college football playoff, and when they get to the bigger games at the end of the season, they tend to buckle, which has just been the conversation and around James Franklin.
Worth mentioning, too, last year they played Ohio State and Oregon as well. Now, granted, they lost both games, but both won score games. Both right there on the precipice, getting over top, and they just didn't quite get there. But considering all that they have returning, considering Drew Allaret, quarterback, going on year three, that running back room, the consistent defense that they always play, it just feels like this is their year. And again, quite frankly, it has to be their year. I don't know if James Franklin is ever going to have this set of circumstances again. And when you get these set of circumstances, you have to get through and make some things happen.
Who do you think is the biggest threat to them in that conference?
I think, you know, all those guys that we mentioned already. It's Ohio State, it's Oregon, it's Michigan. Those are the three teams you always have to look for in the Big Ten. I guess there could be some surprises along the way. What's Jaden Maiava at USC look like? They've been recruiting really well. Maybe they take a step in the right direction, although Lincoln Riley has not given me a lot of reason to believe that. I want to believe in Illinois. I like Luke Altmyer. I like what Brett Bielema has done, but I still think that's a team that's probably right there on the edge of getting into the college football playoff, probably not in. Michigan could be a big wild card this year. Bryce Underwood finally at quarterback. They had probably the best last month outside of Ohio State in college football last year. You handled Ohio State, and then in the bowl game, you beat Alabama. Like, they showed that they could make some things happen even without a solid quarterback situation. Now they have it in a true freshman, Bryce Underwood. They could be impressive, and you could be surprised by them. But in the end of the day, Penn State is the team to beat in that conference and is the team to beat in the country. They have to act like it. They have to play from that position this year as opposed to years past.
I know you already talked about it, but is it too simple to say that if Drew Aller has a good season, then Penn State should live up to expectation? Does it kind of come down to him? It feels like it does.
He has played really, like, when you look at his statistics, when you look at what he's been able to do, besides that game last year against Notre Dame where he had the last, that late pick, it was gross.
Besides the biggest game of the season.
Sure, but, you know, he had won a game already to get to that point.
Yeah, fair.
Besides that, he does seem to at least pace that offense well enough to make some things happen. I do think that Andy Kotelnicki at offensive coordinator, he came over from Kansas a year ago. He's a guy that I think Drew Aller in year two under him. I think that there's more trust there. They can be more inventive. Andy Kotelnicki does, though, get a little bit too inventive, a little bit too cute. He's got to realize he's not at Kansas anymore. You're not in Kansas anymore. You have more talent than just about everybody on your schedule. Act like it. You don't have to reinvent the wheel every time you go out and play a team. You can, at some point, you know, not put Tyler Warren into a Wildcat formation. That's a guy that they're going to have to replace, though, in Tyler Warren. That's a lot of production in that pass-catching room. That's my one big concern about them. Do they have enough pass catchers? But here's the thing. I think, to a certain extent, your sentiment is right. Drew Aller has to show that he's an NFL prospect, has to show that he's worthy of the top five pick that he is being sort of touted as right now. I don't care if you don't have the best pass catchers in the world. You have to make them better. You have to elevate them. When we talk about guys that are very successful at the quarterback position at the next level, you don't usually look at guys that get elevated by their wide receivers. You don't look at guys that can't elevate the people around them. Drew Aller has to take it upon himself to elevate everybody else around him, but he has all of the makings to go do that, not just with his skill set, but with the talent in the backfield, with the offensive line he has. He's got to take that next step.
Do you think that they're going to run the ball more than they did last season?
I think it'll be about the same.
Because that running back room is
I think it'll be about the same.
Legit.
I think it'll be about the same. But when you have a guy like Drew Aller that you believe in, you have to put it on his shoulders every once in a while. So we'll see how it all works out.
He threw 400 times last year.
But final thing I'll say, I think the parallels between 2023 Michigan and 2025 Penn State are apparent. And again, history has a way of repeating itself. Now, history repeats itself every single Thursday right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show as we bring on Kyren Samuels from Sports Illustrated next right here on 92.9. Kyren Samuels is our guy on NFL and college football from Sports Illustrated. Also, recently added another hat, a national scout for Clutch Sports on X, Kyren Samuels. Ky, what's happening, man? Good to talk with you.
What's up, man? Happy to be back. Talk some ball and other things, as always.
Yeah, well, I want to start with some ball and what we're going to see going into the 2025-26 college football season. Penn State, I just got done with a whole bunch of Penn State love. And my big comparison, and I think I've told you this off air, but I think Penn State in 2025 is 2023 Michigan. All of the makings and the parallels seem to be there. Both teams, before they ultimately got to that season, made it to a national semifinal. They both have coaches and quarterbacks who are right there, get the love, but they don't quite capitalize. The full running back room is back. Michigan had Blake Corman, Donovan Edwards coming back. You look at Nick Singleton and Katron Allen for Penn State. When you look at the rest of the Big Ten, in 2023, you know, the two big contenders outside of Michigan were Ohio State and Penn State. Ohio State had Kyle McCord running out there at quarterback. In his first year, Penn State had Drew Aller in his first year. So there were some questions there. I think Ohio State has those questions again at quarterback this year with Julian Sayin stepping in. Michigan starting a true freshman at Bryce Underwood. Oregon is replacing just about their entire team. They're not only 109th in returning production, but at the quarterback position, they bring in Dante Moore. We'll see what he looks like. I'm actually pretty high on him, but the point still stands. How do you feel about that comparison, 2023 Michigan to 2025 Penn State?
I don't hate it. I think there are a lot of parallels, like you said. The one thing I'm most excited to see is if we can get Drew Aller to play to his capabilities, because for the most part, during that 2023 season, J.J. McCarthy, in my opinion, it wasn't anything out of the ordinary. It wasn't anything all world, but it didn't need to be. But he played up to his level and played the best in the biggest moments. When they needed him against Ohio State, when they needed him in the playoffs against Alabama, he rose his level to the top. Now, they didn't really need him as much as the national championship game, but they wouldn't have gotten there if he hadn't rose to the occasion in the biggest moment. So I'm excited to see if Drew Aller can kind of match that level and get to that level, because if he can, he could be a guy that, you know, goes in the top 10 of the NFL draft like J.J. McCarthy did in that 2024 NFL draft. So there's a lot to love about the Penn State team. The biggest thing that I'm looking for outside of the development of Drew Aller is Jim Knowles being gone on that defense. Jim Knowles coming to that defense. Jim Knowles helped Ohio State get over the hump and finally get that national championship after 10 years of not getting one. And I think that he might be the guy to maximize that defense and get the absolute most out of those guys. Like Dennis Denai Sutton, they have a guy that I really like at cornerback in A.J. Harris. They have a ton of talent that's coming back. And I'm excited to see if they can put it all together finally and get over the hump and kind of get to the national championship picture.
Yeah, Drew Aller and J.J. McCarthy, I've always said, and I've said this since last season when Penn State was making their run in the college football playoff, Drew Aller is James Franklin's J.J. McCarthy, right? Like, I think that those two have some similar, you know, parallels. Former blue chip, multi-year starter. You see the idea behind the NFL hype, although you can't say you've actually seen it with your own eyes on a consistent basis. But, of course, J.J. McCarthy ends up with the Vikings. He's going to start there this year. We'll see what Drew Aller has. Do you, as of right now, because this is how it's being talked about, Drew Aller as a top five pick in the NFL draft and one of the best quarterbacks, if not the best quarterback, on a lot of big boards. Like, do you buy into that in your scouting of him?
That's a good question. I'm not sure that I do. It's such a hard eval, especially when you're talking about the lack of support around him at times in terms of like skill set and the people that he's throwing the ball to. It's hard to get a true eval for what I believe he is. I think he is a guy that has all the talent in the world, and we see it come out at times. I believe that the Oregon game last season in the Big Ten championship game is kind of where I saw him getting to his top level. I know he threw an interception to end that game, and it wasn't really the ending that he would like, but brought them back down from a 14-point deficit. I believe it got to a 21-point deficit at one point. But he made some NFL-level throws, and he showed his capability, his talent, even some stuff on the run. That's kind of the thing that I'm just seeing from him. I want to see him get the opportunity to maximize his skill set and have some help from the other guys so we can see what he really is lacking at, what he's deficient at, and not have them lean on that run game so heavily in this coming season. So I like Drew Aller. I'm not as like down on him or out on him as a lot of people, and I'm not like just going all in on the traits like a lot of people are, kind of ignoring all the red flags. I'm in the middle. I'm kind of like a wait-and-see guy on this guy. I want to see the entire system around him and him rise to a certain level.
Now, I like Kyren Hudson, the addition they made this offseason from USC. I think he's probably better a better wide receiver than what they had on that roster last year, so we'll see if he can sort of help elevate Drew Aller's game. But, like, you mentioned it off the top. Like, it's hard to get an eval on somebody who doesn't have a whole bunch of pass catchers outside of the tight end last year and Tyler Warren. But, like, how much, when it comes to an evaluation with a quarterback in college that you want to see in the NFL one day, how much do you want to see him lift up the guys around him? Like, we can talk about the talent all we want around him and the lack of pass catching, but don't you want to see a guy who's considered and touted as highly as him, don't you want to see him lift up the rest of his team?
Yeah, that's a great point that you make. And to me, I think that there's such a funny conversation you say that, because that's kind of like the conversation with the Jalen Hurts, Cam Newton thing going
sure,
on right now.
Yeah, right.
But I'm a guy that believes a quarterback should have a base level no matter who the talent is around him, right? And I think that Drew Aller has met that. If you look at his statistics, he's a guy that has been very productive. He hasn't had a ton of turnovers. They've won a lot of football games. I believe they've gone 10-2 the last two regular seasons. He's a guy that, for all intents and purposes, has maximized the cast around him. So I don't necessarily believe he made anybody, reach a different level. But I also think that he probably maximized the talent around him as much as possible, if that makes sense. So that kind of maybe explains why I'm not as high on him as like a top level draft pick, because I think he's played pretty well, and I don't have the full answer to that. Yet, and that's why I want to see him with a little bit more talent around him, because maybe it is just the guys around him that haven't been good enough, and he's been playing at that level that's plateaued, and he can't possibly take those guys any higher than they have been. So I think that's a little bit of what I'm hoping to see this season. Hopefully we can see it from him, because, you know, he does have that Kyren Hudson. You have both of those guys coming back. And Nick Singleton and Katron Allen. Maybe some of those younger guys develop. If those guys are playing to a higher level and we still get the same Drew Aller, that's just who he is. But if he does get that level of talent that rises around him and he kind of, you know, expands it and gets the most out of those guys, and he's throwing for 3,500 yards, 30 touchdowns, they're in the national championship picture, then I can probably say, hey, he's in his third year as a starter. He's developed a little bit more. He's maximized his skill set and the guys around him. So I think that Drew Aller might have plateaued already, but this season will confirm a lot for me in that aspect.
Who is the biggest threat to Penn State in the Big Ten? Obviously, you have the reigning national champions in Ohio State, so it's kind of hard to omit them. But Oregon is the reigning Big Ten champion. Michigan now has a quarterback in Bryce Underwood. Even though he's a true freshman, he's as blue chip can get to the quarterback position. Who, in your estimation, if you're just picking one team that is the biggest threat to Penn State going into this season, who is that in the Big Ten?
Okay, so the biggest threat to those guys, in my opinion, is going to be Ohio State. When you look at what they have in terms of their makeup, they have the best defensive player in the country in Caleb Downs. They have a ton of guys coming back.
Arguably the best offensive player in the country, too, in Jeremiah Smith.
Yeah, 100%. And they have, you know, another first-round talent in Carnell Tate. They have, a five-star quarterback who was Saban's last prize recruit before he retired, in Julian Fain. He's taken over the keys at quarterback. They went into the transfer portal and got some guys at the offensive line position. They're going to be a running back by committee group this season, but I'm never really worried about the running back position at Ohio State. They always have somebody that is a very good running back or running back by committee where they have three or four guys that can get it done. So I'm not necessarily too worried there. My concern for them is along the defensive line and along the interior of the offensive line. If they can improve in those positions over the course of the season, I think by the time we get to the money games at the end, they're playing the Michigans, the Ohio State, and if they get to that Big Ten championship game, they will be the biggest threat to Penn State's dominance, because I think Penn State will have a fairly dominant regular season. I even think that they will probably beat Ohio State in the first matchup if they play the season in regular season, or excuse me, when they play the season in the regular season. But I think Ohio State has to make up to peak at the right time. When they get to, December, January, when it's time to really play those.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, real people tell their stories live on stage.
I burst into tears. And I wasn't sure if I was crying because I hadn't been kissed in a really long time or if I had just never been kissed like that before.
To hear fascinating, heartbreaking, and sometimes hilarious stories from astronauts, teachers, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
When I go home games, I think Ohio State is probably the best team right there to challenge them.
All right, now switching gears, the Big 12 Memphis story broke on Monday. Memphis offered $200 million to the Big 12, most lucrative membership effort, really, in the history of college athletics. Memphis wants to get out of the AAC, or not the AAC, sorry, the American Conference at this point. And I completely understand it. I've been calling for it. I get it. But with all that, it could be a lucrative offer. The Big 12 said no. Now, what we've been doing here in Memphis for the entire week is sort of, we've been down. I think there's an overwhelming depression to each show I have had this week when we approach this subject. But I need to ask you, how depressed should I be about to know that Memphis got on Monday, even with that offer on the table to the Big 12?
I think it's kind of funny. On one hand, I can understand why, you and the Memphis fan base is upset. On the other hand, we may not even have these conferences in 2 to 3 years to worry about this. So it may be off or not in a couple of years, and we all have one big super league, and then everybody else is left to fend for themselves. So I do think that there's a reason to be disappointed. Obviously, it's a fantastic offer. I mean, like you said, it's unprecedented. We've never really seen anything that was so pro-conference like this before in terms of the revenue split, the pause on the money. Like, there's so much that was beneficial for the Big 12. I don't think that was kind of smart on their end to do. But like I said, in a couple of years, this may not even matter. We may be in a situation where the entire college football landscape is totally different. And if that does happen, Memphis will be one of the schools better equipped to handle that because of the infrastructure that you just talked about with some of the FedEx stuff and the way they've been able to procure funds in terms of NIL and kind of keep that together. They may be in a situation where if we do have this, big split where the top, 45, 50 schools go to this big power conference, and they split it up into twos, Memphis could be like the best of the rest in that group where everybody's left to fend for themselves a bit until they figure that part out and kind of be like the dominant next level conference football. So the Memphis fans may not want to hear that, but
yeah,
to me, I think we're heading towards that direction. And if we are headed towards that direction, Memphis will be one of the best teams to handle that type of situation.
Let me ask you a very simple question. And obviously here in the city, we have a completely obvious opinion that Memphis belongs in a power conference. But from where you sit, does Memphis belong in a power conference? Are they a power conference athletic department, in your opinion?
Yes, I believe so. Especially with, like, I'm just going to look at the results on the field, on the court.
Sure.
If you're talking about this, we're talking about the two biggest sports, right? Basketball and football. Memphis is the national brand in both. Memphis has results in both. And if they were to be put in those power conferences, I would assume that they would, you know, raise their level with the new level of investment that they get. I think that there would be more fans involved. I think there would be more recruits likely to come to a school like Memphis. Should they be in that type of situation? And they've proven, especially on the football end, let's look at the bowl game situation. They've beaten, Power Four conferences in bowl games. You know, they've proven their worth, and they're always in that 8, 9, 10 win range. I mean, Silverfield has done a fantastic job the last few seasons. I think one thing that will, help that case is if they could, get a playoff berth within the next couple of years.
Or just get to an American Athletic Conference or American Conference Championship. I think that's
correct.
That's next in line. Then we can talk about college football playoff. Those things could go hand in hand, though.
Correct, 100%. But to answer your question, I think that they are in a position where they should be in that type of conference. What's the difference between, let's look at Memphis and then a program like, Iowa State to me. I think they're comparable in terms of their football and basketball success. And I would argue that Memphis, year over year, maybe have been even a little bit more successful in terms of, the eyes that they draw. I think Memphis is in a better market than a program like Iowa State. And that's no disrespect to Iowa State, but I'm just looking at the results on the field and on the court. I think Memphis is well positioned in those prime sports to be money makers and to be, key players if they were to get into a conference like the Big 12. I think they would be very dangerous.
So we know Memphis is a part of the discussion. I'm not going to, say that they are the team to beat in the group of five and that they will get a college football playoff berth. But, of course, it's the usual suspects. It's the Boise States. It's the Tulanes. I think James Madison has a little bit of love there. In the group of five, we're going to start up our podcast on the Bluff City Media Podcast Network here soon, G5 Classified. For those that are not familiar with it, we have a good guest every week from the group of five. Then we talk group of five football. Who is your team to beat in the group of five this year? It's a strange year, I completely understand, because with Boise State, you want to give them credit for what they did last year, but no Ashton Jeanty anymore. So how's that offense going to operate? Tulane, you thought they were going to have TJ Finley at the quarterback position. He's out. Jake Retzlaff is in, but can Jake Retzlaff get on the field and into sort of the Tulane offensive playbook enough to actually play this year? I don't know if I would bet on that. Like, who is the team in the group of five or teams in the group of five that you really like heading into this season?
This is an interesting conversation, and I'll give you, three teams. I'll give you a team that I think is the best team today, and I think the best team today in the group of five conference is Tulane. I think they're the best team top to bottom. I think they brought back the best collection of talent, and when we talk about their coaching staff, I think they're the best equipped to handle the storm over the course of the season. And they got the quarterback you just talked about, Retzlaff from BYU, who's not like a world beater in my opinion, but he definitely elevates the floor of that team. I think over the course of their season, that's another situation where I think they can be peaking at the right time. The team that I'm most interested in is UNLV with Dan Mullen. I think they have enough talent where they can be competitive. I think they'll field a very competitive team, and it just matters how fast they get it together. And then Boise State is the wild card, in my opinion. I 100% agree with everything you said. I respect them and what they've done and their consistency over the years. However, losing a guy like Ashton Jeanty is a very, very tough pill to swallow for that team. I think they have the best offensive line in the G5. They have a very good offensive line that is coming back. But the defense leaves much to be desired, and they lost a lot of guys. They lost Taylor Stratton, the receiver, to USC. He transferred there. They're down some heavy, heavy weapons on offense. So I'm interested to see if they can figure it out. But like you said, if we pop up at the end of the season and they're right in the picture and leading the pack again, we wouldn't be surprised. But if they're 7-5 at the end of the regular season, I wouldn't be surprised either. So there's a wild card in my opinion.
The UNLV thing's so interesting to me because they're likely going to run out Alex Orji, who was supposed to be the next guy at Michigan last year. Obviously, he was miserable throwing the football. Dan Mullen, though. Dan Mullen's done a good job with quarterbacks over the years, even guys who didn't necessarily have that type of unbelievable arm talent. I think Alex Orji has the arm talent. It's just about honing it in neck and above, guys, sort of the reads and everything else. Do you buy into the Alex Orji, Dan Mullen brain trust and think it could work. Obviously, it's a different level than what Alex Orji is coming from, so there's going to be a bump in production and things like that. But do you buy into Dan Mullen, Alex Orji sort of being one of the best quarterback head coach duos in the group of five?
You know, it's an interesting prospect because, like you said, he wasn't a very good thrower of the football, right? But Dan Mullen has done a fantastic job taking those guys that have those raw skill sets and maximizing it and, you know, minimizing the field for them and giving them high percentage throws, using their legs, getting them on the run, getting them out of the pocket, making it very comfortable for them. And the fact that it's a step down in level, I don't think it's some drastic step down in level. But, you know, he isn't going on the road and playing, you know, Big Ten teams every week this time. And I think that will help him ease into things a little bit, even if it's just from a mental standpoint. He probably is going to feel more confident, even if the players on the field won't be that big of a difference. So I'm interested to see it because I think playing in a dome will help them out a lot because they have to deal with the elements a lot in Michigan as well. Being able to have a situation where he knows he's going to be without the elements and doesn't have to worry about anything like that, I think they can have a really good season. And the thing with the new college football landscape that I don't think people are really giving enough credence yet is how fast these games can go if you can control the clock early.
Yep.
You'll be at halftime before you know it. With the running clock rules and the way that these things are, you know, going rapid speed, if you can control the ball and have those methodical Dan Mullen offensive drives, eat up a ton of clock, you can win a ton of football games if you're efficient in the red zone scoring the ball. So I think UNLV will be a very much a dark horse in the group of five discussion, and I'm interested to see Orji's development.
All right, now just big college football picture question here, and then I'll let you roll. I have picked Penn State as my team to beat in college football writ large. Like, I'm very high on Penn State. I think this is the year, and it quite frankly has to be the year for James Franklin to break through because I don't know if he's going to have this set of circumstances ever again. But we have media days behind us. We have, like, a picture of what these rosters are going to look like heading into training camp. Who is your team to beat in college football on the large scale?
You know, I've gone back and forth about this a lot. But I'm going to give the Clemson Tigers the benefit of the doubt here. I think they have the most complete team today, top to bottom. I've always been a big fan of Kate Klubner. I thought he kept the ship afloat when they had very little to no offensive weapons on the outside. Then last year we saw those dynamic freshmen at receiver on the outside come in, and he had a fantastic season. I think they have the makings of a national championship team in the trenches as well. They have one of the most experienced offensive lines in the country. And then when you go on the defensive side of the ball, In my opinion, they have the best defensive line in the country with Peter Woods, who could be the first overall pick in the draft, DeMarte Capehart, T.J. Parker, who is another top five level talent on that defense. And you have A.J. Terrell's younger brother, Avion Terrell, at cornerback. That defense is built to be dominant in the ACC this season. And I think that experience they had last year against Texas, where they were kind of overwhelmed early, but found a way to battle back and make that a game. Like, especially Cade Klubnik at quarterback. He was able to make, you know, fantastic throws, build some confidence against a really good team at their home field in a playoff situation. So I think that playoff experience can carry over for those guys, and I think they'll be right there at the hunt at the end of the season. And if I had to pick a national champion today, it would be the Clemson Tigers.
Yeah, you have come a long way with Cade Klubnik. I'll tell you that. You have come a long way, Kai. I respect it.
Man.
You know, I've been on the Cade train for a while, but it looks like you're hopping on. I get it. I completely understand it. Well, it just seems like – we talked about the quarterback position. There's a lot of unknown first-year guys that you expect a lot of, none more prominent than Arch Manning or maybe DJ Lagway at Florida. But when you look around the country, there's very few guys sort of sitting quarterbacks that you really, really trust. Drew Aller, Cade Klubnik, and Garrett Nussmeier are those top three. And all three of those teams and programs are being thought of very highly. So we'll see how it figures itself out. But Kai, appreciate it as always. We'll do it again next week.
Thank you, man. Talk to you soon.
Yes, sir. He is Kyren Samuels. He is an NFL and college football writer and analyst for Sports Illustrated and also a national scout over at Clutch Sports. He is on X, Kyren Samuels. Now, we have a developing situation, Connor, and we talked about it briefly last week, but the on-three arm for the University of Memphis, Tiger Sports Report, has done some digging on last year's loss that the Tigers took at the hands of UT San Antonio that really knocked them out of the AAC title race, knocked them out of the college football playoff race for the group of five. And there's been further reporting from our guy Sam Shoemaker. You can go check it out right now. But there seems to be some sharing of information proven as Sam Shoemaker has gotten his hands on some Instagram messages between Owen McCown and a former safety now at Purdue at the University of Memphis. They're speculating. I think the idea here is Taj Rael, who had a lot of sort of issues last year in and out of the portal. But these messages, I don't know how Sam got his hands on these or how Tiger Sports Report got his hands on these, but these are very serious. Starting quarterback Owen McCown was sent these messages. He was sent various pictures. And the safety from the University of Memphis says, here you go, though. That's all the signals. Owen McCown sent a bunch of crying emojis in response. Then, former Memphis safety said, far left is coverages. I'll send you better lists showing you the call. But they run quarters, and none of they safeties can cover, by the way. No reroutes on the slot. The field safety is the weakest link in the defense. His hamstring's hurting, but he running out of eligibility. So when you play him, he's number zero. And then Owen McCown, quarterback, starting quarterback last year and going into this year for UTSA, said, bet, but let me know if they cut your stuff and I'll put in a word. This is a smoking gun. He sent him the calls and the signals, and he gave them an inside track on injury reports and who is the weak link on the field, who can cover, what coverages they're going to run. I mean, this is as smoking a gun as I could possibly imagine coming out of this story.
It seems like it could be a pretty big deal. I do want to ask you, like, what is the difference between this and just normal intel that teams receive from former players or players who may have been in a program? Like,
normal intel is you going and watching film and figuring it out on your own.
Yeah.
Right? Like, even with signals. I know we go after Connor Stallions, but Connor Stallions, for the most part, before the 2023 season, did some things that were above board. He would look at film, try to find signals, all these different things. But a lot of the intel you get is from film that you watch throughout the week, throughout the offseason. This is different. This is a player that was in that locker room for the University of Memphis leaking their defensive game plan the week of the game that they were supposed to play UT San Antonio. This is completely different. You could have gotten some of this intel from film, but signals and pictures of the calls and the call sheet saying they are going to run quarters and none of their safeties can cover, that's a totally different thing than normal intel. Now, I don't know how this has to be, you know, punished or investigated. Like, I don't know if it will be. Maybe the American Conference will just say this is gone. Like, we're moving forward. But this is insane, especially considering how meaningful that loss was to the University of Memphis last year. That was the most punitive loss they took last year. That was one that took them out of AAC title contention. It took them out of the college football playoff race completely. This is wild stuff.
It's wild, absolutely insane.
And you know, shout out to Tiger Sports Report. And shout out to Sam Shoemaker, who's working on his degree right now, by the way, in the Memphis Journalism Department. Good on him for digging this stuff up. I still, Connor, I don't know how he got his hands on these messages. That's what I'm confused about. Because these are very real.
Hey, what's up, Flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Real messages that were sent, and it looks like a screenshot from former Memphis safety, likely Taj Rael's phone. I don't know how he got his hands on these. Is there going to be an investigation into this?
I don't know. I don't know. Does there have to be proof that it was used?
Also, it's not UTSA's fault necessarily that there was an angry Memphis player that was willing to go to these lengths to spurn his former team.
I don't know if an investigation should take place or even can take place.
But should Taj Rael?
But this is a big deal.
Or whoever.
It's still a deal.
Is this, or Taj Rael, whoever that former Memphis safety is who's at Purdue. You know, wink, wink.
Wink, wink.
Could he be punished for this? Could there be an investigation into him for this? Because I think that this is cheating. This is not something you should do.
I wonder if there has to be proof that it got back to the coaching staff and they used it.
He sent it to the starting quarterback.
I know.
I would have to imagine.
I'm not disagreeing. I'm just saying, like, in terms of investigation,
right?
There will have to be some sort of proof of use, I would have to assume.
But go check out this story written by Sam Shoemaker. He's on X at @S_Shoemaker52, friend of the show. He's been on the show before to talk some Memphis football. But he has found some messages between a former Memphis safety now at Purdue and UTSA quarterback Owen McCown. And it's pictures of calls and basically the entire game plan.
I can't believe he has the message.
Lemonade! Fresh squeeze lemonade! Lemonade? Oh, nuts.
Is your business struggling to be seen? Not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, line starts here.